Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Last month, we spoke about some of the history of policing in America with Professor Gary Potter from Eastern Kentucky University. Some of that history is pretty unique to America. Many other countries have radically different approaches to law enforcement that aren't influenced by the unique racial and economic politics of the United States. Lake Effect's Julian Haida recently called Professor Potter back to discuss what we can learn from police departments around the world.
Professor Potter, thanks so much for joining us again on Lake Effect.
Nice to be here. Glad to be here again.
So I think a lot of people who are looking at policing in the United States are looking for inspiration in other countries, particularly some European countries. How is American policing, the training the police receive, the way police is funded here in America unique?
Well, it's vastly different. It's hard to compare. There are a lot of countries in Europe, so it's hard to directly compare them all. But if you look particularly at the six Nordic states, Sweden, Finland, Norway, Denmark, the Netherlands, and Iceland, the differences are absolutely stark. For example, with regard to police training, we will grab virtually anyone off the street who meets minimum qualifications and graduated from high school and put them into a rush training program, a training program administered by police officers, as former police officers, usually themselves. It generally runs 5 to 9 weeks, with some of it being with a field training officer out in the field once they're back with their department. What that means is they get a very limited education, and they get it for people who already have certain social and certain social perspectives about crime and what they're doing. Well, what happens to those training programs is they're very often a series of repetitive war stories from police veterans. In the Scandinavian states, police training is entirely different. I have some friends who teach at the Finnish Police College. Police officers there have to go to 3 years of police college. It's real college, just like college here. In fact, to a large degree, it's harder than colleges here to actually pass. And then two additional years of training, not administered by veteran police officers, but administered by the same people who taught them at college, where they don't have arrest powers, they don't have guns, they don't have anything like that, where they have to work in the community and adapt to the community. That makes a huge difference. First of all, they're older and more mature when they actually get police powers. Second, they are far, far, far better educated than we are, than police are in the United States. We have no common police standards here. In Europe, there are common police standards. There are standards for recruitment, standards for hiring, standards for education that far, far, far exceed the United States.
Yeah, and I understand that many countries have a national police force. But here, you know, we talked about a couple weeks ago, in the South, it's a county police. In the North, it's often the municipal police. It's a highly localized thing in the U.S. So if someone wants to, you know, join a police department, they can choose between the city police department with perhaps a better union or better salary, or a suburban police department. And they're kind of competing to get the talent for each other as opposed to a single state police department.
Well, that's very true. I mean, we actually have a police department not far from me that has half a police officer in a small town. Obviously, not much is going on there. In the big cities, there's actually a problem to some degree recruiting qualified applicants. And that's why we see police who have been disciplined in one city or fired in one city often ending up being hired by another city where they're simply having trouble recruiting. The size and the fact that there is the policing is so broken up into little pieces is a huge problem compared to Europe, where the national police forces do set standards. And also to a large degree, unlike legislators or Congress or local city councils, set police practices and policies. There are things you cannot order police in Europe to do. even if your city council wants them to do it.
That's very interesting. How much of that has to do with use of force and ways in which use of force is justified here in the United States versus some European countries?
Use of deadly force is extremely rare in Europe. I think in all six Scandinavian countries, there have been over the last 10 years only 10 examples of death in police custody. Which makes us look very bad.
It's like the last couple weeks have met that here in the U.S.
Yeah, maybe a day here, not a bad day. Use of force is discouraged, but it has to do also with the ideology of crime and criminal justice in those countries. They view the role of the police and the role of the criminal justice system as fixing a problem. Not as punishing people, not as retributive, not as going out and trying to coerce and force people into behaviors they don't particularly like or don't particularly want. So we talk euphemistically about community policing here, which we never really do. There they do it. And there the police are an integral part of the community. There police have to live in the community they police, unlike in the United States. Where if you live, you can live outside the jurisdiction you're in. You can live outside the city or town you live in. You can live miles away without ever experiencing the lives of the people that you're policing. That's not possible there. And there are other factors as well. Those countries have very deep safety nets, so people don't have to get desperate about health care. They don't have to pay for college education. They don't have to get desperate about housing or food. The salary of what we consider to be unskilled, low-income workers is pretty much double what it is in the United States. So people don't face the same level of desperation, and the police aren't responding to the same kinds of problems. It is unheard of for the police, other than to assist, to respond to a mental health emergency in those countries. Trained medical professionals respond to those and handle those. Most of those countries have extensive drug rehabilitation, drug counseling, and drug education programs that discourage arrests for possession of drugs. So they don't have that problem. They will take someone to sign someone up for a drug program, or the police themselves will be engaged in what's known as harm reduction. Rather than making an arrest, trying to help that person who has a drug problem with those problems and then with the other problems in their lives.
Yeah, you said, in Europe, if you get drunk and you're stumbling down the street, you don't get hauled off to jail. You get taken home.
Most of the time, yeah, the police will simply give you a ride. And then that reduces a whole lot of conflict. The prison systems are entirely different. By American standards, a prison cell in those countries would be regarded as luxurious, would be roughly the equivalent of a moderate level motel room here. Prisoners could actually sign themselves out. If they have a dental appointment or the kid's having a birthday or they have to go to a child's graduation or they have to go to some other kind of doctor, they go to the front gate, sign themselves out, and come back. The longest prison sentence in Norway, for example, or in all six of those countries, for any crime, for what we consider to be capital murder, is 10 years, with a two-thirds sentence possibility of parole. They're not a retributive system, and it's worked well. The crime rates are enormously lower than the United States, and the number of police is lower. I just looked at Norway as an example. Norway has 188 police per 100,000 people. New York has 414 per 100,000. Philadelphia has 409 per 100,000. The murder rate in Norway is 0.53 per 100,000 people. In the United States as a whole, it's 10 times higher per 100,000 people. In Philadelphia, it's 15.8, which is obviously enormous compared to Norway. The rape rate in Norway is 4.6 per 100,000 people. In Philadelphia, it's 77.4. Clearly, their policing works and ours doesn't.
Well, I've also seen the argument that Scandinavian countries are per capita more wealthy generally, and they're ethnically, culturally homogeneous. So the argument there is that it's not necessarily the policing is working, it's that society has fewer issues on that basis. But that strikes me as being, I don't know, a, you know, racially purifying kind of language.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it is true that people have a higher standard of living. On the issue of cultural diversity, it is true that Iceland is pretty white. It is also true that Denmark, the Netherlands, Sweden are probably more diverse than the United States. If you've ever been to Amsterdam, it's pretty obvious that a country that has scrapped its national food for Indonesian food has long ago given up its claim to cultural whiteness.
Now, I've also seen the argument that these are small countries. And the United States has, you know, close to 350 million people, whereas, you know, a Scandinavian country might have 7, 8, 9, 10 million people. So how would you see some of these strategies, especially with regards to policing, be scalable here? Is it a state-by-state thing? We don't expect there to be a national police force in the United States. How would you begin implementing some of those successes? And what do you tell people who say, what the heck are you talking about education and healthcare for? This is about crime prevention.
Well, two things. First of all, yeah, it would be scalable at a state level. The one difference, which I will concede, is that population density in major cities in those countries is less than in the United States, but that's because they provide affordable housing. And as to the education, healthcare, housing, food, parallel, you're never going to stop crime with policing. You're never going to stop crime with punishment and retribution. The only way to stop crime is to eliminate the problems that underlie it. The only way to reduce crime is to eliminate the conditions that underlie it. They have done that.
A lot of police reform here in the United States seems to get caught up in conversations with police unions. You know, there's some states like Wisconsin where police unions are exempt from right-to-work regulations even. So in states even where there are weak unions, the police unions are very strong. How are police unions and organized labor in the civil sector treated in some of these European countries that we're talking about?
There are unions. There are not separate police unions. Police are part of the simple of the government worker, municipal worker unions, and unions have far more extensive power in those countries in the sense that they are able to influence legislation. They play a huge role in who gets elected to office. They play a huge role in the various parliaments. Labor unions in those countries are also, although they don't have the same reasons to, are not at all hesitant about striking and about using the power of the union to advance their issues and demands. Police unions are an aberration, and it's very hard to figure out what to do with it. My personal opinion, as someone who's pro-union, is that there shouldn't be police unions. They should be, along with other municipal employees, eligible for membership in AFSCME with everyone else. Police unions here have really become bastions of police culture and not really true unions. If you look at the leadership of police unions, I assume many people have seen the comments of the police union president of Minneapolis, who said he didn't say anything wrong, that he'd shot five people so far in his career as an officer. That's probably why he was head of the union. You've seen the police union president in New York City calling demonstrators thugs and criminals and terrorists. Well, that is an internal mentality to that particular occupation. It doesn't really represent either unionism or the ideals of organized labor. And then I guess we have to leave it to our friends in the AFL-CIO to sort that out.
That's very interesting. I used to be in SAG-AFTRA, right, the Screen Actors Guild and Radio Professionals Union, and I can't even imagine one of my union stewards saying that the subjects that we cover as journalists are thugs, and therefore we can stop serving them.
Right. And you know, you have a very narrow focus of protecting cops, even bad cops, maybe especially bad cops, over every other priority.
It makes the whole bad apple scenario difficult to swallow when you have a union so strongly defending police attitudes.
And they're very good at what has become known as propaganda, police propaganda, in putting out those isolated cases of someone doing something really good, or whenever there's a shooting or a violent incident, instead of talking about that incident, trying to delve into the past life of the victim and say, well, you know, he did something wrong 5-6 years ago, and therefore we're justified. And it's also good at increasing fear of crime, which is the single biggest problem in the United States. We have one almost accurate measure of crime, and that's the National Crime Victimization Survey. Not what the FBI reports as a crime is in the crime reports, but a survey that asks people, a very large number of people, if they have been victims of crime. If you look, it started in 1973. If you look at it from 1973 and run it through to today, except for a couple tiny little blips here and there, you will see a steady, unending decrease in violent crime. The idea that we're having crime waves or have ever had a crime wave in the last 50 years is absurd. We haven't. Just in the last 10 years, violent crime is now 40%. I don't know what people are so afraid of.
All right. And thanks so much, Professor Potter, for joining us again on Lake Effect.
Thank you.
Gary Potter is Professor Emeritus at the School of Justice Studies at Eastern Kentucky University. He's the author of many books and has studied the history of policing in America. Potter spoke with Lake Effect's Julian Haida.